Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello, I'm Em, and today I'll be speaking with Baroness Delith Morgan. Delith is the CEO here at Breast Cancer Now and has been involved with the charity for 25 years. We'll be speaking about the work we do as a charity, particularly our mission to turn the tide on secondary breast cancer. Delith, thank you for joining me.
Hi, good to be here.
Lovely. So to start off with, Delith, could you tell me a little bit about your history with Breast Cancer Now? We've just alluded that you've been with the charity for quite a while. It'd be really interesting to hear about why you started with working with the charity and what compelled you to take up the role.
Well, it feels a long time ago in some ways, and then also it feels like just yesterday. So I started at Breakthrough Breast Cancer back in 1996, and the world felt like a very different place then. We didn't have the internet, we didn't have email even. We took it in turns to answer the phone. So it was a very tiny charity, and we were just starting up to raise money to set up a research centre, the first dedicated breast cancer research centre in the UK.
Wow.
And so we were really trying to raise awareness of breast cancer and to talk about cancer and the real challenges that people were experiencing going through breast cancer, the way that there was so much more that needed to be done. There weren't any targeted treatments. Mm. Most people were having mastectomies. There wasn't the kind of, developments that we see now. And it felt like a very different world. So when I started, there was loads of ambition and lots of drive to change things. And I suppose for me, it's been about staying the course to do the difficult things, not to just focus on the easy changes that could get done, like extending screening to women over the age of 65. That was something that we campaigned for years ago. Mm. Getting all the really fresh scientists coming together in the research centre, it kind of, in some ways, that was the easy bit to get it going, but to keep it going and to really make sure that those discoveries actually get into from the laboratory to the bedside, it's a long, long struggle to really, create that hope for all those women diagnosed with breast cancer, whether it's primary or secondary breast cancer. Mm. So for me, the motivation for me, my family were very much affected by cancer when I was young. When I was 10, my dad had lung cancer. And so I'd always, thought that there was something that I could do to try and, make something positive out of that experience. And so I was also, I did a science degree, and I love the research. I'm so interested in all of that. And to actually have a job where you're trying to, to make really cutting edge science happen and to focus on a disease area that you really care about is a real privilege. And then when I was at Breakthrough, sadly, my sister was diagnosed with breast cancer when she was in her late 40s. And that for me really brought the personal into it. I went through the uncertainties with her about what kind of breast cancer she had. Did she need to have, a radical surgery? Were her lymph nodes positive? All of that, we went through all of that. Drinking coffee in the waiting room at UCL, waiting for results and so on. So that uncertainty for me, it just kind of gave me even more commitment to try and find the answers and get better treatments and so on. And then later on, when she was diagnosed with secondary breast cancer, incurable breast cancer, that's when I really thought, she's done incredibly well, by the way. Mm. She's still with us, and she's amazing, inspiring woman. But she's had a really tough time, and so that, in a way, has inspired me to stay the course. To keep trying to get better treatments and progress for everyone at risk of breast cancer, being risk of secondary breast cancer and all the bits that go in between to just really improve quality of life, you know, because I've seen how it's affected her quality of life. So it's nothing like that really for inspiring you to focus on doing the best you can.
Yeah, no, I can imagine that you've got something, you've got so much in the workplace kind of, you know, keep on working towards these goals, but also outside of the workplace too, this is something that is very personal for you. And I'm obviously so pleased to hear that your sister is doing well. But that must be something that is quite difficult to navigate sometimes, perhaps. And you say, you know, from your younger years as well, you had your father had lung cancer. So this is something that's always been sort of present in your life. How are you able to sort of navigate that personal within the professional? How are you able to sort of, do you think it helps having all this knowledge that you can then talk to your sister about? Or does it sometimes sort of, are they at odds with one another? Do you find it a bit difficult sometimes?
I'd be wrong if I said I didn't find it difficult sometimes. I think it's, you know, it is hard sometimes, you know, particularly if, you know, if there's something that's very close to home, you know, for example, access to treatments that my sister might one day need or might need quite soon, you know. So that kind of campaigning or influencing work can feel really, really urgent. But at the same time, you know, there are emotional moments where, you know, if you talk about the number of, you know, women dying of breast cancer, you know, and I think about what that would mean for me, it is quite upsetting. But then, you know, the truth is that, you know, we are who we are, and they're pretty much, you know, everyone is affected by breast cancer in some way or other. Everybody knows somebody. So I just feel in that privileged position to be able to do what I can. You know, everyone in the charity sector wants to make a difference, and so I'm able to bring that kind of personal experience to work in a way that allows me to feel very, you know, motivated. But I do, you know, I make sure that I don't, you know, I don't let the more emotional side of things kind of dominate. So if I'm finding something difficult, I will take some time out. I will, you know, go and, you know, take a breather or have a cup of tea or something if it gets, you know, and occasionally, you know, there has been the odd tear while watching a moving video, or when we've lost a really, you know, we've lost a campaigner or a supporter, you know. But that's life, isn't it? You know, you can't get away from that. For everyone involved in the charity, there are moments that are really, really sad, and then there are also equally moments where, you know, someone runs a marathon you never thought they could, or someone, you know, climbs Kilimanjaro or something, you know, does something they never expected because they want to support the charity. So there are kind of really amazing moments too when you get research breakthroughs and you think, wow, you know, 20 years ago we were talking about that and now it's actually happening.
So
it can be a roller coaster, but it's good.
Yeah, those sort of happy, positive moments, I find myself talking about them with colleagues all the time, even if it's not especially pertinent to whatever we're working on at the moment. You just hear these stories and they are so positive, and you feel like you have to share them with someone. And I think that's part of the culture at Breast Cancer Now that I really enjoy, is everyone is really invested in the progress that's happening. And speaking of which, in these last 25 years, were there any milestone changes that you know particularly stand out for you, other than access to email, I think was probably a good start.
I think it's targeted treatment. So over the years, it's become much clearer all the different types of breast cancer that exist, and how the kind of understanding of the biology of all the different types of breast cancer and the kind of genetic markers and so on, that you can target those processes and then actually kind of attack the cancer in a very, very, very targeted way. That means that, you know, it's all the more important to understand getting absolutely the right diagnosis. And, you know, for example, the first one that came along was Herceptin, and making sure that people could get access to Herceptin was a very big thing. So there are lots of developments like that. Now, recently, you know, we're campaigning because we want to try and get access to a drug called Trodelvy, which, you know, we know can help women with triple negative breast cancer who have advanced secondary breast cancer. And, you know, that is a, you know, really great step forward. It did 20 years ago, that wasn't even on the cards. So there have been some significant steps forward in terms of targeted treatment, but also I think a much greater understanding of the kind of support needs that people going through breast cancer have, and why it's so amazing that we have, you know, through the pandemic and so on, been able to continue offering the amazing support services that we have, so that we can be with people all the way through, so that, you know, someone who's, you know, maybe a younger woman who's potentially thinking about reconstruction or something like that, she can talk to someone who's been through it all through our Someone Like Me service. You know, it's those kind of things that we know so much more about, and we're so much more expert in helping people. So I do see so much progress, but then, you know, we're still looking at, you know, over 55,000 women diagnosed every year, you know, upwards of 350 men diagnosed every year. You know, that's increasing. And the number of people dying of breast cancer is, you know, over 11,000 every year. So we've got, you know, when I first started, it was 15,000. So yeah, that's improved, but it's not improved anything like enough. Mm. So there's still so much more to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, that leads us on quite nicely. We were going to talk a little bit about how we are starting to focus a bit more on secondary breast cancer. And like you say, despite all this progress, there is so much more to do. So with that in mind, what is Breast Cancer Now doing to ensure that people with a secondary diagnosis are not being overlooked?
Well, I think that's a really, really fabulous question, because I think for a lot of people with secondary incurable breast cancer, they feel really isolated, they feel really ignored. And that's, you know, something that I think we really have to change. And it's partly because there has been progress, so that it's possible for people to live longer with advanced disease. You know, there are more interventions that can give people more time, but it's about quality of life that's so important. Yes, it's about time, but it's also about quality of life. And that's where I think there's so much more to do, as well as finding new and better treatments. And for me, one of the really key things that we've been pressing for years is to have an audit of secondary breast cancer, mm-hmm. what's going on in the UK. Now, we've got NHS England have agreed to do this audit, but, you know, we want to have, you know, Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland doing their bit as well. Because what we need to know, and it's hard to believe that this isn't, you know, known already, we need to know how many people are being diagnosed with secondary breast cancer, what, you know, what treatment are they having, what, how long are they living for, and what's their experience like? So, you know, what's in one part of the country, do they have access to approaches that they don't have elsewhere? You know, we've really got to map it all out so that we can start to drive up standards. And that's been agreed to, which I think is a really important step forward. And then, of course, you know, that's on the kind of campaigning and influencing. We will keep fighting for access to new drugs that can potentially extend life and give people more time. But we'll also keep funding that research, which is about understanding why breast cancer spreads, how to stop the spread, why does it spread to particular parts of the body like the brain or the lung or the liver or the bones? You know, what can we do to prevent it from spreading? And then also, something which I'm particularly passionate about is making sure that we diagnose people with secondary breast cancer much earlier, because then you've got chances of having interventions then that can improve quality of life. You know, if you're diagnosed with bone mets because you've got a reoccurrence, then, you know, we need to get in there and give people support so that they don't end up with spinal cord compression or other effects. You know, so there's so much more that we can do, you know, that the system can do to help people, providing we can get that really strong data to evidence the campaigns. And then, of course, you know, ultimately the charity is there for people with secondary breast cancer, whether it's through our helpline nurses with real specialist knowledge to support people when things go wrong, and also through our support groups where it's possible to actually meet and talk to others going through similar experiences. And that's really invaluable for people feeling very isolated, you know, facing, you know, the prospect of a very, very limited future. So I think there's a lot that we're doing, but it's so much, you know, part of our ambition to do more and to really, really ensure that in the future, all the health services in the UK are offering absolutely the best possible opportunities and outcomes for women with secondary breast cancer.
Yeah, absolutely. And with everything in mind, everything you've just spoken about, obviously our mission at Breast Cancer Now is that by 2050, everyone with a breast cancer diagnosis will live and be supported to live well. And what sorts of things give you hope that we will still achieve that goal?
Well, I think we need to ensure that for every type of breast cancer, whether it's you know, triple negative or HER2 positive, whether it's breast cancer in young women, older women, whether it's breast cancer that's diagnosed as secondary right at the very start of the experience, whatever kind of breast cancer, that there is a targeted, effective treatment with limited side effects that can really make a difference. And that's what everybody needs. And of course, you know, part of that is about having new and better ways to diagnose breast cancer. You know, there are, you know, all sorts of things in the pipeline that, you know, sound really promising, but ultimately it's got to be about getting that diagnosis really quick so that, you know, you can get treatment as quickly as possible. And that might mean new and better ways of screening, more targeted screening, potentially understanding people's individual genetic risks. So, you know, there's a lot that can be done, needs to be done to understand how all that can work better. So we need more treatments. We need better and faster diagnosis. We need people to understand what to look for. So really good awareness and education. And then ultimately, people who are diagnosed with breast cancer, they need that support. They need access to really brilliant specialist nurses, the best possible healthcare, and they need to know that we're with them all the way along, you know, so that the experience of breast cancer can just be something that everyone takes in their stride. You know, that's the kind of future I want to see. I want to see a time when, you know, people do not lose their lives because of breast cancer, because they've had a really early diagnosis. It's been absolutely dealt with by amazing treatments. They don't feel down or depressed or isolated because they've had fantastic support and information, and they just get on with the rest of their lives and, you know, as if nothing's happened. And that's my hope for the future. And I think, you know, we keep working hard. We keep doing everything we can now. We are Breast Cancer Now, so we can take action now. Then we can get there. We can do so much better than we are now.
Yeah. Yeah, and everything you've mentioned, they're all things that we are already working towards, working on, especially, as you say, more targeted treatments and therapies. Whenever we have a research podcast, I always learn so much more about everything that's happened since the last research podcast, and that's only, you know, a few months down the line. So this change is always happening, and that's always incredible to see from within the charity, and I hope that people outside the charity are seeing that happen as well, and kind of sharing that hope. But we've spoken a lot about kind of what we're doing internally. What can other people do to kind of help further research and care for individuals with a breast cancer diagnosis?
There are so many things that people can do to play their part. Now, obviously, you know, we want the, you know, the health systems, whether it's in England, Wales, Northern Ireland, to really listen to us and to take seriously the outcome of the audit that's being kicked off, and to invest in research and so on. And, you know, there's a lot of really good stuff going on. However, you know, we can't wait for everyone else to do their bit. So we as a charity, you know, through the incredible kind of generous support that we get from people fundraising for us, people, you know, doing those marathons, sponsored walks, cycles, tea parties, you know, wear it pink, you know, dress down days, all of that fundraising makes a massive difference, because the research that we fund is all by, you know, funded by voluntary contributions, the same as our, you know, our services, our helpline, everything is run because of the support that people give us financially through donations and fundraising events and so on. You know, whether it's, you know, Asda, Marks and Spencer's, or the, you know, people postcode lottery, or the commercial sector, you know, plays a really important part in helping to fundraise for us, and we're very grateful for that. So, you know, whether it's a tiny little contribution that somebody makes a month, £2 a month, lots of people give us £2 a month, but that's, you know, that really adds up to a research project, a a conversation with a nurse on the helpline. It all adds up to create this movement. And then there's those who, you know, who feel they've got the time to actually go and talk to their MP, or, you know, write to their hospital bosses about something, and get involved as a patient advocate, which again is so valuable, because, you know, where people have had experiences of you know, being a patient in a breast cancer service, often they've got the best ideas about how that can be improved. And so we can help to influence local breast cancer services for them to improve. So whether it's fundraising, whether it's campaigning, whether it's acting as a patient advocate, you know, we really value all of that and really need all the help that we can get so we can achieve the very best for everyone affected by breast cancer.
Brilliant. Thank you. You know, recently we've kind of discussed within the charity how we want to focus more on secondary breast cancer, and we've introduced our Turning the Tide initiative. And I wonder if you could just tell me a little bit more about that.
So when the charities merged, Breast Cancer Care and Breast Cancer Now, when we came together, we wanted to set ourselves a really ambitious strategy so that we can make as much progress as we possibly can. And that's where we're looking at all of the challenges ahead of us, and felt that we wanted to make a real impact on secondary breast cancer, because, if you like, that's where the front line is. You know, that's where most women who die of breast cancer die, because they've got advanced secondary incurable breast cancer. And so we want to really focus on making sure that all the progress that we should be seeing is actually reaching everyone, whether it's somebody in, you know, the Northeast or someone in the Southwest, that everyone is getting the best that they possibly can have with secondary breast cancer at this stage. And that's where the audit comes in. But also making sure that we're doing absolutely everything we can to build that hope for the future, so that coming down the track, the fruits of the best possible research will give hope to the next generation of people with breast cancer, and that we can achieve that vision of 2050 where everyone will live and be supported to live well. And that's really why we have to focus on secondary breast cancer now, so that we can really stop women dying of breast cancer and help women to have the best possible quality of life.
Thank you very much, Delith. It's been a genuine pleasure talking to you. I've personally learned a lot, and I hope that everyone listening has really learned something as well. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure talking to you too. Thank you.
To find out more about Breast Cancer Now and what we're focusing on during this Breast Cancer Awareness Month, visit breastcancernow.org/BCAM. Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services, and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.